Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. If someone had recorded the collected sayings of baseball's Satchel Paige, that might have made a good gateway album. Don't look back, something's gaining on ya, he famously said. Now, baseball's philosopher pitcher is immortalized in song courtesy of the Baseball Project. It's a musical team managed by Steve Wynn of the Dream Syndicate and Scott McCoy from the band Young Fresh Fellows. And Scott McCoy joins me here in our studio. Welcome.
Hello, it's good to be here.
To continue the baseball metaphor, you are pinch hitting for Robin Hitchcock on our show today.
I guess so. And as I am the touring bassist with the Venus 3, Robin's band, I feel happy to be here. And, you know, I'm hoping he's getting his tooth taken care of.
Yeah, emergency, yes. A little emergency dental surgery for Robin today.
Yeah.
He's actually supposed to be, you guys are all supposed to be on stage with the Decemberists tonight.
And so. We will be.
Okay.
Believe me, we will be.
So how did
if we have to prop him up there.
How did the baseball thing start? I mean, you're a lifelong fan?
Yes, definitely.
Are there lots of baseball fans traveling in indie rock circles?
There are. There's also a lot of indie rockers who couldn't care less about baseball in general, or probably any other sports. But, you know, then they're scattered about the sports fans. And I find maybe baseball seems to be a little more interesting to the indie rock musicians that do like sports. I mean, it seems like baseball's more common than you don't run into that many like football fans or whatever. I don't know. It's hard to say. That's a generalization. Well,
but baseball is full of like Satchel Paige, these amazing characters.
Exactly. And that's what the Baseball Project, you know, us, Steve and I writing all these songs, that was probably the thing that was most attractive about it. I mean, we weren't going to rewrite like center field or some anthems that were going to be played at the ballparks. Although actually some of our songs have been played at the ballparks, which is nice. But that wasn't really what we were going for. We were sort of mining our love for the game, but also the lore of the incredible wealth of strange characters who've played. And, you know, some doing maybe questionable or despicable things and others doing really heroic things. You know? So We covered a lot of ground, I think.
In one sport, the whole panoply of human behavior available to the songwriter. So the album is called The Baseball Project, Volume 1, Frozen Ropes and Dying Quails. I guess if you have to have the title explained to you, this is not the album for you.
Yeah, it just sounds good, too, even if you don't understand what those things are. You know?
Right. I mean, Frozen Rope, a screaming line drive, dying quail, a little blooper
exactly.
Just over the infielder's head.
Yeah.
So who is this album for? Is it for the fan? Or?
That's a good question. I mean, we just assumed that the people who like our music, you know, who like the Young Fresh Fellows or the Minus Five or the Dream Syndicate or Steve and the Miracle Three or maybe REM, you know, we just assumed that those people would probably check out the record, whether they were baseball fans or not. And then we also hoped that maybe people who hadn't heard our music, who are big baseball fans, might think, oh, this is interesting. Let's check it out. So, and I think that happened to a degree. And it was nice because usually with sort of our careers, speaking more specifically of Steve and I, you know, we put out records that a lot of the same people probably buy each one and come to see us, you know, at the same clubs like over and over again. And we publicize the records the same way, and this way there was a whole new avenue to explore, you know. And
you got on ESPN.
We got on ESPN, and we're on MLB.com. We went and performed live, and you can watch us playing on the Major League Baseball website, you know, and that's kind of cool, you know.
For an indie rock band, not bad at all.
Yeah, it's really neat.
We've mentioned Steve Wynn a couple of times. Let me mention the rest of the lineup,
okay.
The starting lineup featuring Linda Pittman from the band Miracle 3, who plays drums, and REM's Peter Buck is your designated hitter, I guess.
Yeah.
The song Pastime, you know, this gets to the question of baseball as something whose time has come and gone? Is that what's happening here?
It's sort of asking the question. It's not so much saying has its time come and gone? It's more questioning whether it's better now than it used to be, or whether it's not as good as it used to be. A question which doesn't necessarily really need to be answered, because I still enjoy baseball now, despite a lot of things that have happened that might make it a little harder too. But the game itself really hasn't changed that much. There's a lot of things that have changed around it, and but yeah, that song, I was sort of just waxing, you know, about players that and things that stuck in my mind, and just kind of rattling them off and wondering, you know, were those the good old days, or is it still just as great, you know, kind of, yeah.
The song is Pastime from The Baseball Project. Time is the name of the song from The Baseball Project. Scott McCoy is with me here in the studio. He and Steve Wynn are sort of the managers, the player managers of this little baseball team. You sing about Denny McClain and his 31 wins. That'll never happen again. I mean, the game has changed.
No, there was an article in the paper the other day about Roy Halladay. He just got his 10th win, and people were saying, do you think he could win 30? And there's just so little chance that could happen. I mean, you only get 35 starts a season now, and whereas back then they were probably in the 40s, you know, and pitchers don't go as long deep into the game, Halladay being an exception in that in that case. But you know, he just, I mean, Toronto relievers have already blown a couple wins for him, and so it's just not going to happen. I just don't think there's any way. Yeah.
So here's the thing: is how do you and Steve and Peter Buck and Linda Pittman avoid sounding, well, Linda won't fit in this, but how did the rest of you avoid sounding like crotchety old men complaining about, you know, the game ain't the way it used to be when we were kids?
Well, that's the thing. That's what I didn't want to do in that song, and I hope that it doesn't come off that way, because I was asking a question. I wasn't, like, wasn't saying that is the case. And, you know, it's a little easier for us somehow to write songs about players a little further in the past, but I hope with Volume 2 we'll have some current players. I'm working on an Albert Pujols song. I hope something will happen with that. And I know Steve's got some things in the works too. So, you know, it.
But the real iconic figures, they are older, and, you know, they're from the past. I mean, that's part of just why they're iconic.
Yeah, exactly, and legendary. And then a lot of it for me is growing up in the 60s and 70s. That's probably when I had my most intense, you know, baseball experiences and memories. And so I tend to go back to those a lot, too, you know.
What about, I mean, as a child of the 60s, the protest song? Is Harvey Haddock's a protest song?
It kind of is, actually. You know, that one, I mean, Steve was making a point that, you know, that should be considered a perfect game, or shouldn't it? He was, again, sort of, you know, he was saying, let's add Harvey to the list, because it was considered a perfect game.
We're talking about the Pittsburgh Pirate pitcher. Yeah. Was it 1959 that he...
59, yeah, it was, they just, the last week, or about a week and a half ago, was the 50th anniversary of the game, May 26th.
He threw a perfect game for 9 innings, actually took it into the 13th inning and eventually lost the game. And because he lost the game, he never got credited for the perfect game.
Well, yeah, because he gave up a hit in the 13th.
Right.
And also walked a man. and the guy got on an error. So,
but for those first nine innings,
yeah.
over nine
well,
innings.
12. He
over pitched, 12, yes.
He pitched 12 perfect innings, which, you know, no one has ever come close to doing that. But he... Well, know, then, that was back in the days when, you know, you pitched a lot of complete games. You know, they let him go. Of course, with the perfect game, they weren't going to want to take him out either. You know, and he was, and you know, he went into the 13th inning. But originally, it was because he pitched nine perfect innings, he was given credit for a perfect game. But they changed the ruling. I don't can't remember if it was Bowie Kuhn or I think it was Faye Vincent. Maybe changed the ruling like in the. You know,
mid-90s
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, mid-90s or something like that, yeah.
So he is one of the great hard luck stories
Absolutely.
In all of baseball.
Absolutely.
And now he's a song.
May 26, 1959, in Milwaukee on the mound. Javi Haddix of the Pirates was mowing them down. 27 up, 27 gone. Nine innings in the book, and not a man had gotten on. Now in history, only 17 have thrown a perfect game. A most exclusive club, and a most exalted fame. But after nine, the Pirates, well, they hadn't scored a perfect game, and still, oh, Harvey had to pitch some more. Sandy Koufax, Cy Young, Jim Bunning, Tom Browning, Charlie Robertson, Don Larson in the series in 1956. Why don't we add old Harvey to that list?
So it's a baseball protest song from my guests Scott McCoy and Steve Wynn, the Baseball Project. The song Harvey Haddix. You guys want Harvey added to the list of there are only 17 names in all of baseball history who've pitched a perfect game. I'm going to say I don't agree with you because if you get him on the list, then he's just one of 18.
That's true.
Right now,
That's true.
Is one of one. There is only one Harvey Haddix.
There really is. There really is. And one, you know, one of the greatest things that's happened with us putting out this record is that Harvey Haddix's widow, Marcia, had heard about the song, and we ended up getting in touch with her, and she's just been really fantastic, and she loves the song, and she thinks, she goes, that's the kind of music Harvey really would have liked, you know.
Wow.
Like she's, and it's really great, and she's a big fan, and she took out a little ad in the local paper in like Springfield, Ohio, or someplace, I think, where she lives, took out an ad in the local paper for the album and stuff like that to tell people about it. It's really great. She's wonderful.
Yeah. So now, just on a personal note, who was your team growing up, and is it still your team?
Well, yeah. I grew up first with the Giants, living in the Bay Area, the San Francisco Giants. Then the A's came to town while I was about 13 or something. I loved the A's too, so I followed Giants and the A's. It wasn't. It's not like a New York or Chicago thing where you like one and
other.
Hate the other.
Yeah.
Really wasn't like that at all in San Francisco and Oakland. So I became a fan of both of them. I ended up moving to Seattle and living for 25 years there. So I went to a lot of Mariners games. So of course I became a Mariners fan as well, which was tricky when the Mariners were playing the A's. They're in the same division, but. You know, you just deal with it.
And what about Steve? Who does he root for?
He grew up a sort of a Dodgers fan, but he's a Yankees fan now. He's lived in New York for a long time, and so he's a big Yankees fan.
So are you two able to maintain your neutrality when it comes to the actual songwriting and production?
Yeah,
and
we're pretty good about it, even though, you know, I mean, I'm sort of one of those people who probably tends to not like the Yankees like most of the country that doesn't live here, I think. I mean,
you're treading on thin ice.
I know, I know. But, you know, I mean, the Yankees are sort of the team that's easy for everybody to hate. They're
like the
Lakers, you know, like the Lakers or something.
All right, so then explain to me the Yankee flipper.
Well,
this is not the Yankee Clipper, the
no.
elegant Joe DiMaggio. Yeah. This is something very different.
This is this actually was a true story of a night out on the town with Mike Mills of REM and Dennis Dykin of the Smithereens, who's an old friend of mine, and Blackjack McDowell, who happened to be a friend of Dennis's
and who was pitching
as well,
for the Yankees.
Was pitching for the Yankees at the time, and let's just say we had a really good time the four of us one night, and Jack suffered ill effects from it the next morning. Now, he didn't pitch that day, but I think it was the next day that he went out and had probably his worst outing, one of the worst outings of his career, and he was leaving.
Part of which I'm going to lay the blame
well,
at your feet.
Yeah, we always kind of hoped that it wasn't our fault, but we always felt a little guilty about it. But Jack was, he was relieved, I think, in the fourth inning, and as he was leaving the mound, the Yankee fans, in their inimitable fashion, roundly booed him, and he probably wasn't feeling that
chipper.
Chipper, and he flipped him off. Yeah, so he was the Yankee flipper, and there was a great photo of him flipping off the crowd in the papers the next day. Yeah. As this was New York City, you remember they had a few bars there. Jack loved the Replacements, and we drank enough that we became them. Two guitars, bass, and drums. Yeah, our lineup was the same man. He was crowned the Yankee flipper by the foul ball of fame. He gave 50,000 fans the finger, but we'd like to share a little bit of the blame. The Yankee flipper, the true story of my guest Scott McCoy and a couple of other indie rockers and Black Jack McDowell of the Yankees, and a night on the town that, for Black Jack at least, did not end well. There is a postscript, though. Black Jack, Steve and Linda ran into Jack and talked to him about the song, and he said he'd heard it and he thought it was great, and he didn't blame us at all.
Now, you said before you were able to root for both Bay Area teams. You're also able to divide your loyalties to your bands more or less equably. And so both of the groups, the Minus Five and Young Fresh Fellows, both have new albums coming out on the very same day.
That's true. Yes.
July 7th. Yes. And before I let you go, when you were on ESPN last summer, people were doing a live chat with you.
Right,
somebody
right.
asked you, and somehow this is a baseball question, you just, I guess, had to be there, Schaefer or Rheingold?
Well, I said Schaefer because I've had Schaefer more often than Rheingold. And I also remember when the first time I ever came to New York City going to a concert in the Central Park that was a Schaefer Summer Music Series.
That's right. They
Billy
did briefly.
Billy Preston and Mama Lion.
But that was part of the baseball experience.
Yes.
Was the brand of beer that your team was associated with. Scott McCoy, the album is called The Baseball Project, Volume 1, Frozen Ropes and Dying Quails. Scott, thanks so much for joining us today.
It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure.
And that's going to do it for today's Soundcheck. Tomorrow, come join us for our broadcast from the Green Space, WNYC's new street-level studio. We'll have live music from the Decemberists, and we'll launch a contest on music videos. The show is the actual seats are sold out for tomorrow, but you can join us live on the air or online at WNYC.org. Soundcheck's technical director is Irene Trudell. The program is produced by Brian Wise and Joel Meyer. Our executive producer is Gisele Regatau. We had help today from Cameron Gannett Breslin and Smriti Rao. I'm John Schaefer. Be with us again at this time tomorrow for the next Soundcheck here at 93.9 FM WNYC. 5 years later, they were lonely clover, but nothing for me. My career was over.